Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
First thing, I guess, to ask is for people who don't know who B. Dave Walters is, what's like a quick catch them up?
Hello, friends and time travelers who've arrived here from the year 2007. No, I'm joking. Hey, B. Dave Walters was the DM of the first D&D stream on television, which was Invitation to Party on G4 for the cast of Stranger Things on Netflix Geeked. Also DM of the Black Dice Society. You can find me all over the place wherever fine streaming content can be located for D&D or Vampire, basically. You'll find me there.
Awesome. So something I've been noticing that I personally need to do, I've been noticing that I need to take, you know, a lot more time for myself. And I notice, you know, on Twitter, you post pictures of gym time and that type of stuff. How, with so many things that you have to do, do you find the time, you know, to take that time for yourself?
Well, there's one thing that I'm very adamant about, that there's only one thing that the entire human race is equal in, and that is time. We all have 168 hours in a week. You, me, Oprah, Obama. So there's time for everything if you manage it right. There may not be time for it in a day. There's definitely time, even if there's not time for it in a week, over the course of like a month or so, there is. So it's just a question of prioritization. And I hear this all the time, people telling me like, oh, I don't have time. And I'm like, that's cool. Anyway, how'd you like The Mandalorian? And they're like, oh my God, I loved it. And I'm like, oh, and The Last of Us has been dope, right? And they're like, it is incredible. And I'm like, great. I just found like 24 hours for you right there. So, yeah. I mean, the time exists if you make it a priority. That's there's no way around it, unfortunately. And, but I think you'll find though, if, I think where the mistake people make is by trying to load themselves up with too much, and then it gets overwhelming to even look at. Like if you're working full time and then you're trying to be a content creator, that's a nights and weekends job. If you have a relationship or if you have kids, saying to yourself, I'm also gonna find 5 hours a week to work out might seem overwhelming. So that's not what you do. Instead, you say, hey, right here during this time, I'm gonna go for a walk around the block. Or right here at this time, I'm going to do 10 push-ups. Or every time my dog barks, I'll do 10 push-ups or something. Like, gamify it a little bit to fit it in there. But the simple answer, unfortunately, is there is not a particularly easy way. It just can be done. It's just try and make it as enticing and as fun seeming as possible, especially if it's a change that may not seem that pleasant. In that case, focus your mind on the reward and how pleasant the reward's going to be.
I just got the year membership for 24-Hour Fitness.
Mm.
And I've been doing that, just jamming out time to do that.
Yeah. Well, I would say also, not to detour us too super far over into fitness, because I'll ramble this whole time about that. The most important thing with that stuff, especially if you're short on time, is to have a plan, to know exactly what you're going to do when you walk in the place. So you're on a mission and you don't have to walk in and kind of look at all the equipment and figure out what to do where you're like, nah, it's leg day. I got to go over here. I'm doing, you know, 4 sets of 5 on the leg extensions with 165 pounds. And then it becomes a checklist. And as you're marking off the checklist, it's a greater and greater sense of accomplishment. It also will make sure that you're making progress in the right direction, because it is very, very, very easy to spin your wheels in the gym and not actually accomplish anything. Just like in life, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, for sure. I have definitely gone there and just looked at things and then, you know, found a couple things to do. And then left and had been there for like an hour and like accomplished really not very much.
Yep.
No.
Yep. Everybody does, for the record. That's not weird for you.
Yeah. So I guess going over to TTRPG stuff. I have recently noticed that I am very fond of player-focused games. Where do you find yourself on that spectrum? Do you lean more narrative-driven or more player-focused?
You know, I've been playing this game for a long time, for about over 30 years now, and the biggest evolution has gone from the game used to be PvP. It used to be the Dungeon Master versus the players. The Dungeon Master was actively trying to kill you and the players were actively trying to survive. And it has evolved into a cooperative storytelling game, which is a far, far, far superior expression of it. At the end of the day, yes, the Dungeon Master needs to be enjoying themselves, but if you have a story that you want to dictate, you shouldn't be DMing, you should be writing a novel. It's a story that you're telling together. You set the scene, you set the sandbox and the stakes, and you react and you yes and to everybody else as they're coming along with you on this adventure. But it's a story that you're telling together. So it is more about the players, for certain. More about the players.
So we recently did Brindlewood Bay on an episode, which is a great TTRPG. And a lot of the places in there, they prompt you to ask the players what they see in the room. Instead of like you describing the room to them, you prompt them to say, what do you see in here? And like you give them the, you know, context that they're going to be looking at this thing in. But it was so much fun to work with, like, here's what they see in there. And like at some point they added a bar in there, and at no point in time did a bar ever get mentioned. And that became a big part of like what they were trying to find out and figure out. And I think, for me, like having those moments where the players are doing things makes the game more fun for me than does leading, I guess. That makes sense.
It increases their engagement. It makes it stops people from zoning out, first and foremost. And two, it makes them feel like they have a vested interest in it. I will do that all the time. You just say things like, you open the door and inside it's terrible, you tell me what it looks like. Or when they crit, you tell me what it looks like. Or when they miss, like if they roll a one, that takes some of the sting off, but you tell me what it looks like. I probably say those words more than anything else over the course of running a session, because again, that's when you get into it being a tapestry that you're weaving together.
Another thing for me is the theater of the mind is a thing I always do. I never do the maps and grids thing. It does something to my brain, I guess. Like it puts everything there, and then I feel like trapped in that box. How, I guess, would you make that better? What would you do to help that problem?
Oh, I don't know that it's a problem. You know, minis and tiles and terrain are not my jam either. I know some people that just love it. For me, that is similarly to what you were just saying. That is a different expression of the game. It is a valid expression of the game, but it is a different expression of the game. Because if I'm describing the creepy pirate ship and I'm doing a good job of that, what everybody in the table is going to see is going to be slightly different, but they're going to see their creepy pirate ship. When you take the time to build it and have it there, it's like, no, it's that creepy pirate ship. It's that and that alone, which is fine, because sometimes you can create something cooler than a person would have imagined. There's also people that have aphantasia. They have no inner eye, so it is difficult for them to imagine things. And so having the tactile elements helps a lot. You still can have surprising elements of things like that. Like I just did a stream not too long ago with Dwarven Forge, which is some good friends of mine, and they make really just top flight terrain. And they had a whole town. And one of the things that I was saying is that you don't necessarily have to define what's in every building. You still can scratch that itch of, when you get to this building, when you open the door, you tell me what's inside.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner. So you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Right, and you still can have that. You don't necessarily have to have gone through and built every single thing, because it does drive up your cost, drives up your prep time. You need more space. But if that's something that you enjoy, that's cool. You know, if you enjoy measuring out 5 feet of movement and, you know, flanking and all of that other business, then minis in terrain are probably the thing for you. But I definitely have nothing against doing it that way. It is just, I would argue, much easier to do it theater of the mind. And that's part of the reason why I think you see the overwhelming majority of streams are theater of the mind. I feel the same way about virtual tabletops too. I don't think VTTs add anything at all to streaming, but that's also just my opinion.
We've been doing Blades in the Dark using One More Multiverse. Mm-hmm. And I mostly got it because it has all the stuff for the rolling of the dice there. But the players have so much fun because there's like the little 8-bit character that you get to run around the map with.
Yeah.
And so most of the time I just put it on the like central map and they just run around and not really have anything to do with what we're doing in the game, just so they have that fun, like, you know, I can run around the board thing. And then all the dice and stuff are right there for them to roll. So they have access to that, so they don't have to figure out everything.
I mean, it's again, that's a different expression of the game, but a completely valid expression of the game. You know, if that's what the people want to do, if they can sit down and have an enjoyable session and laugh and tell a story with their friends, and when they get done are going to be looking forward to doing it again, then it's a success.
That, I guess, brings me around to the idea of digital dice versus physical dice.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started playing the game, which is not that long ago, 2014, actual dice was like the biggest thing for me. Like, I needed all the dice.
Yep.
I had to have them all. But now that I've been, you know, recording and doing like the podcast, I've shifted to just completely digital dice. And I just feel like it's so much handier to just have it all right there on the screen.
I prefer physical dice. I'm not gonna bust out anybody, but there are some digital dice rollers that I have very, very, very real concerns about, that they are not random. I mean, arguably nothing's truly random, but that it's difficult. What I find is I end up using a mix of both. If I'm just rolling D20 or rolling 4 dice or less, I'll roll it in my dice box. If I have a big dice pool, like a, you know, a pallet and smites and crits and all that business, especially because I do a lot of high level stuff, then I'll use the dice roller on D&D Beyond. So, but if I could only go to a deserted island with one that somehow has electricity, don't ask me why, I don't make the rules. I would definitely take physical dice though.
Do you prefer the one shots, or are you a fan of the bigger things?
In a perfect world, and when I've had my way with things on longer term projects, I like ongoing streams. So stories that have little to no break. I mean, you know, you break during Christmas or whatever, but for the most part, you keep going. But every 3 or 4 episodes, you change up the story, so there's an easy point of access for a new person to join. Mostly when I do one shots, that's for charity. In charity one shots, people can donate, they can change the stakes of the game, they can change what happens, and things kind of go off the rails very quickly. So it is only, you're telling a story in the strictest technical sense with those things, because you're like, all right, you're in a town and somebody just donated the Tiamat's here. Great. Okay. All right. Tiamat's here now. Yeah. You just have to go where it goes. I think logistically for a lot of people, it's harder to get together consistently. So it's harder to tell a longer term story. But I think probably a 2 or 3 shot is kind of a sweet spot to be able to get across a meaningful story with a compelling beginning, middle, and end, and having learned something about the characters along the way.
For the podcast, the most that we we've gotten is the Blades in the Dark, and we're four episodes in. We did a create characters, and then we've played three sessions since then. I think we're very close to wrapping that up. And yeah, I do think that, like, I do like the, like, longer, long-term campaign things, but I feel like right there in, like, the, for me, it's like 6 to 8 is like a really comfortable, like, I've gotten everything I want to do done here, and we can continue that story, like, in a different game. But I think, like, in the 6 to 8, I like, that's my space. I don't know.
Well, something that is a challenge that literally everybody who streams is has to answer for themselves is, you need enough content to build a fan base, to build a following, but not so much content that it's prohibitive. Because if you're in episode 200 or so of something, there's nowhere for a new person to come in. And the effort required to get up to speed looks to be overwhelming. That's why a lot of shows, even long running shows, you'll see will restart the campaign on occasion. And that's why. Part of it is you've told all the stories you have to tell. But I mean, hey, we've been telling stories about Superman and Spider-Man for, you know, 60 plus years. It's more about easy access to the people. So if you're feeling like if you've said what you have to say in 6 to 8, you absolutely should wrap it up, because one thing you don't ever want is for things to just drag on.
So do you prefer playing in the game or running the game?
You know, people, every time they ask me this, I used to say that I like them equally, because I too enjoy both. But I realized something. When given the option to play or run the game, I choose to run the game 100% of the time. I have never opted to play when I could run a game. So I guess I like running them at least a little more. Because a lot of times, even when I'm playing, I'm still trying to figure out what the storyteller is doing, trying to figure out how to help them to make sure that we're all rowing in the same direction type thing. So even when I'm playing, I'm still thinking like a storyteller.
That was something me and Steph, the other person who's constant on the podcast, were talking about when we both ran a one shot, the same one shot, but we both ran it differently. And so we did a behind the scenes type of thing where we talked about the differences between running it. And that was something Steph was telling me, was like, it felt like I was there helping push the narrative in the direction the whole time. And that it was cool to have someone like in your corner. For me, running the game is the thing I enjoy doing. I like making weird, quirky characters and playing them, but I like running the game more.
I'm gonna be heading to D&D in a castle this weekend, and last time I ran three sessions in a row, and I ran the same story all three times, but it was vastly different. Where they went, what they did, how it ended, it's just the inciting incident was the same, and then they couldn't have arrived in more unique spaces. So it's it is always interesting seeing how somebody else is gonna, their take on something is gonna go.
What is your favorite character that you've ever played?
You know, I realize fairly early on, and I point this out to people, your first few characters are you. Like, your first character is probably your idealized self, but your first few, if you go back and you look at them, there's a certain through line in who they are and what they're like, because that's you. So I started early trying to make characters the opposite of what I've done before. Like, the first one I played on a major stream was a Chateau on We're Alive Frontier, who was the leader of an unruly band of misfits that didn't really listen to their detriment, to everyone's detriment. And he was kind of this intense, stressed out guy. So then when I got to play Baron Victor Temple on Vampire the Masquerade, LA by Night, originally he wasn't even going to be a Baron. I intended him.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Him to be having a good time. I asked myself, what kind of vampire would actually really enjoy being a vampire? And I was like, a nightclub promoter. And that's where that came from. But then he ended up becoming the leader of an unruly band of misfits that didn't listen to their detriment. So then Freely came along, which was my character, my D&D character that I played for years. He just got married and retired recently, who was my lucky boy, who again was just going to be this happy-go-lucky character, but he still ended up a charisma character and a face a lot of the times. Although I very much leaned very hard into his 8 intelligence and just kind of made him just nothing but a sweet bean. So I realized those were all aspects of myself that were manifesting. It was those three that helped me see it. And that was what kind of freed me up to do like completely different things. But I think if I had to pick one, it would be Victor, because I loved Vampire the Masquerade so much during my formative years in high school and college, and getting to add something to that continuity. That was the first character I have that people got tattoos of, which is wild to me. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's that would be, if I was forced to pick one, it'd be the Baron. Although Freely was the first character I ever got in a video game, I'm still gonna stick with Victor.
My favorite character is my second character also. is Rutherford. They were a gnome wizard. We played 3.5 and I took all of the spells that like added to your strength or your speed, and I punched things.
And, muscle wizard.
Yeah. And recently, the person who ran the game told me they're writing a like novel version of what's happened in the future of this game. And
nice.
My character has completed his goal. Which was to beat the God of Strength and become the God of Strength.
Nice.
So Rutherford is a God of Strength, and I just always thought, oh, that's so awesome. And I think for me, that character said, I'm free to like do whatever now. Whereas like initially I felt like, oh, I got to figure out the rules and figure out what's going on and how to play the game. And then once I had the game down, I was like, can I switch my character? And they said yes. And yeah, that was just like, what does something with the rules that's fun and enjoyable that I would like? Yeah.
You know, that's also something that I think a lot of storytellers should do, especially with new characters, but even if they're, or new players rather, but even if they're not new players, new campaigns, if somebody has a character that they created and they're finding out that it doesn't quite fit or wasn't quite what they expected and they don't like it, let them change the character. It's fine. You know, like you can try and work some reason into the narrative why the warlock is suddenly a ranger. But yeah, let people have that. Because again, the most important thing is everybody having a good time.
I guess shifting gears a little bit, what do you think the next big thing for the TTRPG hobby is?
You know, I had a, if you'd asked me this before the OGL kerfluffle, I would have had a very different answer. I think it is, you know, I debate this with a lot of people because there's some people in this space, very intelligent, accomplished people that have some data to back up what they're saying, that believe all of the people who are going to watch streaming are currently watching streaming. Like the acquisition audience has already been reached. I don't think that at all. I mean, the vast majority, you look, what's the biggest show in the space? Critical Role. Millions of people have watched Critical Role, but the majority of people have never heard of that show ever. The numbers Critical Role does would get the worst, would get any network television show canceled. 100% of things pull more numbers than that. So I think more and more people are just going to find out about it. And that rising tide lifts all boats. I mean, I'm glad to see so much great new content coming out that can go out in reach more people, especially as D&D becomes more and more mainstream. They kind of shot themselves in a foot recently and killed a lot of that momentum, but I don't think they stopped it completely, especially if the movie's any good. If the movie's any good, at some point Stranger Things will come back. If Stranger Things talks about D&D anymore at all, that'll help. And just more and more people will make their way into the pastime. And that's good for everybody. That's what I think's gonna happen.
I'm pretty much the same on that. Are there any people you look forward to seeing more of in like the newer creator people that you're seeing?
I'm fortunate in the sense that I get to pretty much work with whoever I want to work with. I mean, within reason. I try to pay attention to who is on the way up, who's already there, but also who just needs their opportunity, who just needs to a shot to get in front of people and have a chance to shine. So I won't bust anybody out in particular, but I'm always working to help some people get to the next level. Sometimes I do it very publicly. Sometimes I just do it quietly behind the scenes.
Okay.
I would be remiss if I didn't. I have to give a shout out to at least one person. My homie is Friday. Everybody, I think her Twitter is Friday or is Friday TV. Hang on, let me look real quick. Everybody should follow Friday. It's is Friday TV. Toss her a follow.
Yeah. I watched that stream. That was good. That was great.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff. Great content. So you're a big advocate for representation in media.
Mm-hmm.
In the TTRPG space, what I guess can people do to help that along?
Two things. First thing is you vote with your wallet, you know, support creators that are doing things that are pushing into that space. Like Coyote and Crow, like our game, Into the Motherlands, Sienna Una, which I think I just mispronounced. I apologize. And anybody that is trying to do things, to increase the diversity of the space. The second thing is look at stuff that you're making. And as you look around the table, if everyone looks the same, that's probably bad. You know, there's always rooms to mix it up and include some different perspectives, some different genders, different religious orientations, different sexual orientations, just to bring different points of view into a thing. And I think that's important. And that's always going to be important because that's the way the world looks. And then the third thing I would say is in your storytelling, pay attention to that sort of thing, especially if you're unconsciously falling back on old tropes like having slavers or having the elves be the wisest and most beautiful and of course the fairest of them all, and having the dark skinned brutes that are the orcs and the goblins and are all stupid and bad, you know, and making sure that you consciously kind of uproot some of those things that have been instilled in all of us over time.
What have been some of your favorite collaborations, people you've worked with and done things with?
Oh, wow. All of them. I think here's the thing that you can always look for. Anybody you see me work with twice, you know, I think We're Alive Frontier, which is season one and season two are both still up on YouTube. That story holds a very special place in my heart because it was my first major stream. But we did such like ambitious things like breakaway sets. Like it was a zombie horror survival show, and there's things like people were attacking and like axes were coming through the walls when we were like sitting at the table trying to play and stuff like that. So that was really neat and really immersive. And I really loved that for a lot of reasons. I love that character and I love the story we got to tell. The season finale of the first season of We're Alive Frontier, I do something that is akin to hitting a hole in one and capturing it on camera. Like I did something in front of everybody, a role that was so incredibly improbable that I don't want to ruin the story for anybody, that has still stood out. And I'll remember that happening 50 years from now. And then getting to work with Jason Carl on Vampire the Masquerade. The first stream I ever did was a charity game in December 2017, which was a Vampire one-shot, which was my first time playing on stream ever and his first time running a game on stream ever. And I remember we went out and had lunch a couple of days later, and we were just talking about the World of Darkness and what would have happened with the different clans of vampires, because V5 was still in alpha at that point. What would have happened with the different tribes of werewolves? And it was just amazing to even get to give my point of view and insight into what the World of Darkness would have evolved into, and then to get to add some links to that chain of continuity that actually are permanent. Corner Case was getting to write the comic book I did, Dungeons and Dragons: A Dark and Wish, where I actually got to add some things to the continuity of D&D and add something to this world that I've loved so much and has brought me so much joy. So, yeah, in any or all of those things.
You said you were doing D&D in a castle.
Yep.
Are there any other upcoming things to look out for, expect, be excited for?
Right now, we have... Idle Champions presents Fury of the Black Rose, which is the cast of some of the cast of High Rollers and some of the cast of Oxventure, and an original character from Gabe Hicks. Actually, Mark Hulmes, who is the DM for High Rollers, is still made an original character. We're only two episodes into that, so there's still plenty of time to catch up on the Idle Champions or twitch.tv/CNE games, rather. And you also can vote weekly to influence the outcome of that. So votes are going on now. There's that. More live events this year. I can't say anything just yet. I can't give away too much. I mean, just NDAs are flashing in front of my mind. I'm like, NDA, NDA, NDA. More live events and more streams, though. More.
I struggle a whole lot with pacing when I'm running the game. What tips do you have regarding pacing?
When I come together to write a story, I'm very, very clear on how I want the story to start. I'll usually write out the intro. I have an idea where it needs to be roughly by the half and an idea of where I want it to finish, but I never plan the second half of the adventure, because both the dice and players will surprise and betray you. And I want to have room for it to go the way that it wants to go. All things being equal, you should cut a scene off a little bit early rather than have it go too long. Like, if you have a scene where there's one more thing that they would say, that's when you should stop it. If you get to the point that you're like, yeah, well, you've gone too far. Same thing with the monsters. They can have a cool monologue. The characters can have kind of a cool retort to that, and then it's time to roll initiative. I will also say, I think a lot of times people lose track of the fact that talking is a free action. You know, have anything that is intelligent and have language, have it interact with them. Have it interact with them all through combat. Have your monsters talk trash, especially if your players fail something, if they fail an attack or the monster makes the save or something like that. Have the monsters talk a lot of trash to them. That drives up the stakes so quickly. You will get so much hatred in your player's heart for like a white or something just by doing that small thing. All of those things that kind of increase engagement all along the way help the game feel like it's going faster. And more than that, you know, the monster's got as many hit points as you need it to have. If the fight's going on too long, it can die. If the fight is going too quickly, it can live. It can have allies show up. It can run. There's 100 ways to do things to kind of expand or contract to make it go the way that you need to go.
Speaking of the enemies talking, one of my favorite moments in one of the episodes we did was they were fighting like a goblin boss, and the goblin boss was talking to them the whole time. Steph said their character rented the same spell book that the goblin boss had from the library. And so then they had the like discussion of all the different pages and everything and like where cool spells are. And they looked at the bookmark, and it made the fight so much more fun and like immersive, like you were saying.
Yeah.
And I really do look for those moments to just fall into that and say, oh, this is something you're having fun with, and I don't know how we can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, obviously there's a different standard to a home game than a stream. I would argue that even in a home game, you should always have something that you're trying to accomplish. You should have a plan and a point. People talk so much about joking about, you know, how hard it is to keep a group together and scheduling conflicts and all of that. And some stuff happens sometimes, but if you're having trouble getting people to show up for your games, that is a symptom of they're not getting anything of value at your games. When I was running my Patreon games, I had people getting up at 2, 3, 4 in the morning where they were to play with us, spending their birthdays with us. Like, they would move heaven and earth to be there for those games because they were getting something that was of value. So still take people's time seriously. But if you're streaming and you've only got, you know, 6 episodes, you've only got 2 hours or whatever, you really can't afford an entire shopping episode. You can have a shopping scene. But if you're playing at home and they're really having a great time following the Easter egg of this goblin spell book, it's like, well, okay, you know, like, let's see where this goes. But again, you still should always pull it up when they would want a little more. Never let it just kind of drain out to its conclusion. Yeah.
I think that's all the questions I got. That is all the questions I have.
Yeah. I would just say more than anything for people listening, it's like I said, I go back to what I said right at the very beginning. The most important thing is that everybody's having a good time. Even if you're streaming, if just make sure the players are having a good time. If the players are having a good time, the audience is having a good time. Everything else will fall into place. And don't stress or agonize too much about the rules, about believing that you have to know every single thing. Like I said, I've been doing this for over 30 years, and I still will double check things before I make a ruling on something, because I got 4 or 5 versions of this game floating around in my head. And hey, if you make a mistake, feel free to be like, hey, last time you cast that spell, I know it said it worked this way. I checked. I was actually wrong. It actually works that way. And the rule of cool above all else, you know, if something seems dope, let people do it, and use as flavorful descriptions as you possibly can for things, because the game very quickly becomes hit, miss, hit, miss, hit, miss, unless you make it something else.
I guess the last thing would be, where do people find you? More stuff from you.
You can find me anywhere wherever fine streaming content can be located. But on all the social media platforms, I'm B-Dave Walters everywhere, and Twitter is the most active place. I would be remiss if I didn't point out that my girls are selling Girl Scout cookies. So there's a link pinned to the top of my profile, B-Dave Walters, where you can get those. Also, I have three tutorial programs that I have put out: 14-day DM, 14-day player, both where I will teach you high level skills so that you can either go pro at this if that is your intent, or just shocking all the people at your table. And also 14-day writer, which will help you learn how to write screenplays, novels, comic books, anything that you want to do, and will cut about 5 years off your journey to becoming a professional storyteller. Those are up on my Twitter also, although I guess the Girl Scout cookie thing is pinned right now. But if you come to Twitter and you type in B. Dave Walters in 14 day, you will find a link to all of those things.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, and may all your hits be crits, y'all.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.